Right, it's time for the big interview. My guest is Andrew Thomas. Morning, Andrew.
Good morning.
Born in Bristol, but spent a lot of your time growing up in Wansford and the Peterborough area.
Yeah, that's right. My mother comes from Peterborough originally, family out in Wansford. Still quite a few friends and family out that way.
Okay. You've written your book, Entanglement, set all around Britain, but a lot of it is in this part of the world.
Absolutely. One of the main characters is cast as a professor at Cambridge University.
It's based around five friends, four mysteries, three deaths, two road trips, and a secret that will change the world.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Before we get started on the book, and you will read some of it out for us, I know, which is great. In the first hour of the programme, we were talking about retirement and asking, is it something to look forward to or to dread? And you've written this book in retirement.
Yeah, I mean, I consider this to be my second career in many ways. I took early retirement in my mid-50s, and I wouldn't have got around to taking my writing seriously if it hadn't been for the fact that I was no longer working.
What about that moment when you know, retirement suddenly happened? How did you feel at that moment? Do you remember?
Yeah, do you know, I moved house at the same time, and I took about 18 months renovating a 17th century cottage.
Nice.
And it took that whole time for me to really get used to the fact that I was no longer working, beholden to somebody else, meeting deadlines, etc., etc. It was neither a good nor a bad experience, but it was strange.
So what's the toughest bit? Is it that the alarm clock not going off in the morning, not getting the phone calls, the emails, not being busy? Is that what it is?
It was the not being busy, yeah. I mean, I used to work a lot with American companies, and therefore I was used to a lot of video calls, particularly in the afternoon because of time zones and so on. And just not having those things as part of my day. I mean, living alone particularly, it felt empty if I hadn't have been having my cottage rethatched at the time, so I'd got workmen to talk to and things like that. It could have felt quite isolating.
On the other hand, if you want to go down the pub or whatever you want to do, can do it whenever you want to do.
And I'm well known down the pub.
Good man. Okay, three actually of the authors that Entanglement's been compared to: Douglas Adams, Neil Gaiman and Terry Pratchett. And so there's obviously humour in there as well as a bit of adventure.
Very much so, yes. I was a big Douglas Adams fan and latterly...
Hitchhiker's Guide, of course.
Oh, yes, yeah. Absolutely. And latterly Pratchett and Gaiman as well. And I think some of the humour is very Adams-esque, if you like. In fact, when I was starting the book, it was primarily because I was finishing off some edits on a different writing project, and I was just bored with it. Picked up a copy of The Hitchhiker's Guide just to kind of clear my mind. It's like, oh, yes, I remember you can be funny as well. So it was great.
Mm. Tell us the outline story of Entanglement.
OK, well, there's a few different threads, basically. To start with, one of the main characters simply vanishes. He's used to being very much regularly in contact with his family, based in a thinly veiled version of Wansford, and he just suddenly disappears.
So the thinly veiled version of Wansford, that's not often said.
Well, I just changed the name, basically.
Okay.
and the family start to look for him, and they start to uncover all sorts of mysteries about his life that they just hadn't been aware of. But then you've got a second strand to the story, which is this woman endlessly and accidentally moving between parallel worlds.
See, when you bring in a sci-fi twist, you can get away with anything, can't you?
You kind of do, yes.
Arthur C. Clarke, do you like that sort of work?
And you know, he was the Arthur C. Clarke of Time and Stars. It was the first book I ever read, sci-fi.
Yeah. Because for many people, that's like, oh, I'm not sure about that. But you're mixing the two up as well. And is a bit of James Bond in here as well, in any sense?
I don't think so. I mean,
gadgets and stuff like that, no?
There's not much in the way of gadgets, although it's interesting you talk about the mix, because quite a few of the reviewers have said, this wasn't my normal genre, but I loved it, and that was great.
That's all you want.
Yeah.
A bit more music, and then we'll talk some more. Are you going to read a little bit for us?
Absolutely.
This is BBC Radio Cambridgeshire.
And it's Man in the Morning, 9 till noon, Monday to Friday. We have our big interview every day at 11. Somebody with an interesting story to tell. And it's Andrew Thomas who's with me today. He grew up in Wansford. He's now written a book called Entanglement, which is set very much in Cambridgeshire. In fact, starts off in Wansford kind of way. And then, as I said a bit earlier on, goes on to all kinds of adventures with a sci-fi twist. Funny, warm and full of big ideas is one of the things said about it. And you're going to read us an excerpt now, right at the beginning. Yeah,
absolutely. It all started well enough. Fate was bored. Nothing funny had happened in days and it needed a laugh. When the UK's most secret research station vanished, though, it smiled. when odd things started happening to some moles and a brick. It chuckled. When it realised what was coming next, its laugh could be heard across every world. It was going to be a very good week. But what was coming next? Well, imagine you wake up in a parallel world where everything looks familiar, but no one knows who you are. Worse still, you've no idea how you got there. Then you shift to another world, and another, year after year, until eventually you find yourself in one where it's you who doesn't know anybody. No friends, no family, no one. Could you cope? That was what a woman called TC was about to find out. Then there were the cakes. So picture the scene. An unforgiving highland landscape made of granite and carved by glaciers in a time when woolly mammoths walked the earth. A grassy glen now with a small playful stream gurgling through its centre, laughing and dancing as it splashed over the rocks. High above, barren peaks grumbled amongst themselves as they gazed down in disapproval of anything so frivolous. And well they might, for the stream seemed almost to sigh with pleasure as it finally disappeared into the lush green bogs. With 18-hour nights in winter and 6 months of rain a year, it was never going to be a major tourist destination. That said, when you add in the mild year-round temperatures and the fact that it's hidden from the nearest village by a series of hillocks, you have one thing. The perfect site for the UK's most secret research station.
And we go on from there. And, of course, there's been a big disappearance, actually, of a place, which is quite unusual. So inspiration, ideas coming to you all the time in your retirement as you were fixing things and screwing stuff on the wall or whatever else?
Yeah, I'm forever scribbling ideas down and sort of leaving little dictations on my Apple Watch and things like that. And the original inspiration came from just reading part of The Hitchhiker's Guide just to purge my mind of some other stuff. And it just suddenly jumped to me. And then, I mean, a lot of people say that your first novel is about yourself, and I guess there's bits of me in some of the characters, but certainly a lot of family and friends from this area as well.
Talk to us about growing up in Wansford. What was it like?
Well, I kind of grew up half in Wansford and half in Bristol because my mum came from Peterborough originally, and we used to spend all the summer and Christmas holidays over with the family. And I think one of my strongest memories is actually of my Uncle Derek going down to the pub in the village, frankly getting half cut, and coming back sort of dancing into people's door driveways to set off the proximity lights and things like that. But it was great. I mean, you know, my grandmother, who kind of features in the book as well, was there. And so it's a lot of personal stuff.
Are there things you can and cannot say in novels when you're writing? Do you have to be careful, obviously not to upset too many people?
I guess so. I was certainly very careful about things like language so that it was quite... I mean, characters get upset and some nasty things happen, but I didn't want to use bad language and I certainly didn't want to go anywhere near politics or religion or anything of that sort.
A friend of mine who wants to write best-selling novels says the best advice he was ever given was write 1,000 words a day, and that's a lot.
It's huge. And I mean, if I write 1,000 to 2,000 words a day, that's an amazing day. But you've got to resign yourself to the fact that some days you'll agonise over a single paragraph. And other days, maybe you're not writing prose. Perhaps you're just sorting the structure of the novel out and things of that sort. So that's a good day, for sure. But there's other sorts of good day as well.
You're writing with a pencil and pen, you're on a battered typewriter, or is it on a laptop or whatever?
I'm doing it all on my laptop.
Don't lose it.
And storing to the cloud. But at the same time, I find I'm printing it off quite regularly because there are some things that perhaps end up in a slightly different sequence to how I write them. And I just find printing it off and physically looking at the pages and then literally just cutting it up and sellotaping it back together is good.
I was fascinated to find out quite recently that Agatha Christie, who, you know, the biggest selling writer of modern time, actually didn't work out the endings when she just created situations. And then just sort of made it up from there, which seems extraordinary. Did you have it all planned out?
I actually didn't. That makes me feel brilliant, that does. Because I kind of had the sense of how it was going to begin and how it was going to end, but I really had no idea how I was going to get from one to the other. And with the sequel, which I'm currently about a third of the way through, I'm still not really sure what the ending is. I've got a vague notion of some things that could happen, but not 100%, no.
So tell us about the central character, David.
David, he's in the RAF, he's group captain. He's not the youngest ever to hold the role. He's 6'2", 29.
You go into all that detail. You know everything about him.
I know a lot more.
Porridge in the morning or
than appears in the book. He reads sports autobiographies. And but, yeah, I mean, he was based locally to here at RAF Witten. And or Whiten, not quite sure.
Whiten, thank you.
Good, that's what I always thought. Yeah. And he's engaged to Liz, who's a Cambridge University professor. So that sort of gives you your initial connection to this area. And then he's also the cousin of one of the other main male characters, Nigel, who lives a little bit west of here.
Okay. You got the book published. How do you do that? A lot of people will be thinking about, I've got some ideas and whatever. But what about that leap from writing something down, doing all that work? Well, do you write it first and then find a publisher, or is it the other way around?
You write it first, typically, because if you're going to go down the mainstream publishing route, you're going to need to send the first 10,000 words or so, plus an overall synopsis, to an agent who will in turn either accept you or not, and then contact publishers.
You get those reject things through the post.
Oh, yeah.
You had those.
You're not a proper writer until you've had bad reviews and rejects.
Painful, though, isn't it?
Yeah, sometimes.
I mean, you've got to really want it to put up with that.
Yeah, you do. And some of the reviews, even, I've had a couple of did not finish reviews, and people just saying, no, I didn't like it. Although, to be fair, most of them were kind enough to say, on balance, I think it simply wasn't for me.
Okay, so you've now got the finished product in your hand.
Yep.
It's for sale, it's there on Amazon, it's in bookshops and so on. How do you feel?
Amazing. I mean, the day I first opened the parcel containing the first copies of the book, I videoed it, stuck it up on Instagram, and it's just, I was speechless, frankly. Astonishing. And the other big driver for me was that my mother is in her 90s, and she's had a number of strokes, has quite serious dementia these days. And that had got a lot worse during the time that I was writing the book. And I was just really keen, well, keen's not even the word, you know, to get it finished and to give her
for
a copy.
Yeah,
yeah, before it's too late.
Oh, bless you.
And I did, which was great. Her dementia has got worse since, but on the day that she got it, she was with us, and
she knew what was going on.
She knew what was going on.
Brilliant.
She was really excited. Next day, she appeared to have forgotten, but then I said, "You know, do you remember what happened yesterday?" And she's like, "Oh yes, you brought your book."
Oh,
it's just
well
the
done.
Best feeling.
Well done. Well, there was a bit of a theme in the programme tonight, isn't it? We talked about retirement from beginning almost to end. And this is Entanglement. It's Andrew's retirement project, his novel, the first. There are others to come. We're going to talk in a moment more, and you can be part of the quiz, yeah?
Absolutely.
Listen, thanks for coming to talk to us. We love the book. It's called Entanglement, and where can people get it?
They can get it on Amazon. They can order it in Waterstones, all sorts of places.
Brilliant. And it's published by Ursus.
It is.
U-R-S-U-S. And that's Andrew Thomas.